The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. Whatever that impulse was that brought you here, thank you for honoring it and see how your day unfolds. We just chanted Gatha on opening the sutra, and we're all here to maintain it. We're the maintaining three treasures of wisdom. And so what we're, we have a, I know there will be a lot for those of you who are here for the first time that's new, and both with physically and what you're hearing. So I know it'll be a learning experience and something that each one of us that is here did for the first time at one time. And so what we're studying, this is a intensive training period. We're studying right relationships with the world, with ourself as the world, and expressing gratitude for this life that we have. And this is drawing, this right relationship draws from the Eightfold Path, of a path of freedom that the Buddha over 2,500 years ago offered to humans to be free from suffering, to truly liberate ourselves, how to see right, how to see things rightly. So the right, this word right, isn't opposite to wrong, although there is a way to see things wrongly, but there's a rightness in us that's in accord with the Dharma, which is in accord with the nature of things as they are. But that's not easy to see. It's complicated. But we have a path to see that clearly. In the Buddha Dharma, we learn that, and you might have learned this just in beginning instruction, that we don't possess anything inherent. So it's looking at what is a self. There is one, but maybe not how we have learned or thought of it, that this is not anything that's fixed, or that there's an inherent essence, that we're moving, we're in flux. This is a process of aggregates coming together, causes and conditions. Looks like Hojin and whoever else you are. And it's interacting. We're each a little world. And so we have all these worlds with our own experiences and conditions all meeting and interacting. And so what the Buddha realized was that mostly what we want is what's pleasurable, and we want to get away from what's not pleasurable. And one of the first steps on the Eightfold Path, which is right view, right intention, right speech, right effort, right livelihood, right mindfulness, and right concentration. An ancient path, an ancient road that many have walked on, many noble beings have walked on. And that this right view is being aware of the Four Noble Truths, which is Buddha's first comment was, hey everyone, life suffers. That's a noble truth. Noble. He didn't bemoan it, as I understood in the readings. It was just like, what a relief to call that out. because we don't want to face what is, we move towards pleasure, or we stay neutral, we move away from what's painful, we have something, we don't want it. We don't have something, we want it. And we kind of vacillate in that. And then that's the first noble truth, the second noble truth, the third is there's a way, and the fourth is the path, the right path that was laid out. So that's where we're kind of starting. Yesterday we did a retreat on the mental factors in the tradition. And there's a teacher named Asanga from the 4th century of Mahayana Buddhism, founder of the Yogacara school. And there was a quote where Asanga said, "Within ignorance," one of the three poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance are the three poisons, "there is an active quality of misknowing that actively distorts," I like that, "in our ignorance, within our ignorance." And that's not like we're stupid, it's just there's certain parts of us that haven't woken up to what is true as it is. And he called it an active quality of misknowing that actively distorts things. We don't understand that our basic intentions have effects. So what I wanted to kind of look at today, which I've been talking with someone, is distraction, and the teachings of a distraction, or the practice of distractions, things that take us away from our wisdom, that we have in our knowing, this imperative that we may have to stay focused, cut beneath the mental afflictions that give rise to suffering. So we were looking at, there's afflictions, which are emotions, right? Mental afflictions that we all have that give rise to suffering. There's 6 root afflictions, and they're called kleshas. Sometimes they're called kleshas, which is disturbing or afflicting emotions, which includes emotions and thoughts or cognitive aspects, right? Thoughts. Or thoughts that are disturbing. Asanga said, "A phenomenon upon its arising arises with the characteristic of being thoroughly disturbing or conflicting, so that through its arising, the mind stream arises thoroughly disturbed and conflicted." And it goes very deep. These are very deeply rooted in us. We call it conditioning. And the 6 root afflictions are attachment or craving, anger, pride or conceit, ignorance, afflictive doubt, and afflictive view. I'm not going to go into them. You can actually look them up. But what the Buddha Dharma is asking of us to do is not so easy. That if we actually do want to free ourselves, we have to be in a very different relationship with our pain and discomfort in ways, all the ways it shows up. These are some of them. And the wonderful thing about it is it's self-liberating. We hear self-fulfilling samadhi. That when we're meeting the thing that was never binding us, because there's no thing in the thing that was binding us or anyone to bind, but it appears that way, if you can follow. What we meet, we can self-liberate. We can liberate that thought. We can liberate that fixedness by how we can concentrate and see through the appearance and understand causes and conditions. So this is not something easy to take in. This is practice. This is what we're doing. You see that in a thought. We're saying, set that aside. Don't push it down. Don't put kindling on it. Fan it. Just see it for what it is and refocus. Put your attention back to your breath. It doesn't mean it's gone, but what do we want to, where do we want to place our attention? We start to learn to see the nature of thoughts, their illusory nature, little by little, and how we get caught in that struggle. So, this was the essence of what Buddha saw in his realization. Oh, all sentient beings and I at once attain the way. All sentient beings and I and this great earth and all things at once attain the way. One person seeing through, everyone sees through that potential. So I was thinking about distraction. I didn't know if this was going to come together. And it may not. I'm just like shooting. I have some thoughts I put together. We'll see what happens. But how can we meet that desire to experience pleasure, but to always move away from what's undesirable or unpleasurable? Can we remain mindful, aware, and be in a different way to meet our pain and discomfort? And primarily, I will touch on the distraction of technology, although in and of itself, it's nothing whatsoever. It's just what we do with things, with anything. So anything can be medicine. Pick anything. And anything can be poison. Our favorite food can be medicine, and it can turn into poison. So to keep that in mind. But also how distraction can be used as a weapon. How we can, even as people, be distracted by certain things so we are not focused on what's most important. But it's our mind, so we have to really decide here, make some decisions. I'm not outside of this, by the way. I have one of these things. So, and lots of screens, too. So the word distraction, what does it mean? To be pulled away. How am I pulled away? How are you pulled away from what you feel is most important in your life? That's what we're looking at. How are we pulled away from ourselves? And we're so easily distracted, and we complain about it. I'm so distracted. But what do we actually do then, right? All distraction is always about how we are in relationship with our reactions and our intentions. So this brings in right view, right speech, the whole of the Eightfold Path. Some are helpful and some are not. So how do we practice this? So it's not judging anyone or anything, I hope. But we can see our lack of tolerance when we perceive something externally as different or internally. And often we distract ourselves and to continue to act out our discomfort. Generally, we avoid the heart of the matter. Then we suck up that vital energy we need to transform something because we're so in that loop of I don't want that, and this is, or inside, I don't want that, either externally and then what the reaction internally, if I'm saying that clearly. So how do we stay on that middle ground? How do we live in a troubled world and not be troubled? Of course, what we're looking at goes a lot deeper than how many times we check our phones. One teacher wrote, distraction is the foundation, the very foundation of ego. So I was looking at that. So there's a healthy ego. It's the one that got you here, that wants to sit and release a thought and practice or try it or do things that are move us towards wholesomeness, right? That's a good ego. And then there's an ego where it's reckless. We're reckless. We're demanding. We want to have fun without thinking of the consequences. Who doesn't want to have fun without consequences? We work a lot like that. And part of us wants that really strongly, really strongly. So what is behind our distractedness? It's easy to think, wow, there's just so many external stimuli. That's the problem. But what we are surrounded by, as I was saying, is just phenomena, nothing more. The objects of our world are just there, innocently, just being what they are. We made them, after all, most of them. Noises are just noises. Sounds are sounds. Sights are sights. Objects are objects. Smartphones are smartphones. Do I have the right name, or is that outdated? Yeah? Okay. Computers are computers. Thoughts are just thoughts. There's a phrase Dogen says, are we used by the 24 hours or do we use the 24 hours? Are we used by technology or do we use technology? It's not to get, we can't go back. That's too far gone. So how do we use what we have so we get brighter, freer? So that's down to us and our distractedness and being more clear what our values are, what our integrity is about. Distractions are everywhere all the time. Even in Buddhist time, they didn't have computers or blingy things, but Buddha would say, go find a quiet place to meditate. What's up? Like, no, there was hustle and bustle in the towns and things that were catching your attention, distracting. Go to a quiet place. So we create this, that go here to a quiet place. Noise isn't shut out. Fire engines aren't shut out. But we have a quiet place because we need a quiet place inside. You know, particularly screens are everywhere. I went to the gas station to fill up the car. I'm from Philly, so you might hear that, gas station. And there's a video playing as I'm pumping. I was like, whoa, really? Come on. I went to get some fruit. There was a video of recipes of what to do with that fruit. All over. And you're like shopping. And you don't feel it, see it. Does that smell good? No, just like, oh yeah, I'm going to try that. Yeah. We can live in a kind of cave in a world of flickering images that pulls us in that direction of, one of the things we talked about was afflictions derived from ignorance. And one was, there's five of them, six, there's a lot of lists in the Abhidharma. So this is six, and this was non-introspective awareness. Mental factor that being an afflictive intelligence that has made no or only a rough analysis is not fully alert to the conduct of one's body, speech, and mind, and thus causes one to enter into careless indifference. So we're just not aware. We're not examining. We're not careful. We're forgetting. And we used to do a retreat called Underground Subway, where we would stay underground all day and just write about things underground. And of course, we can still do that, but no one talks anymore. We used to have, you know, all the, you used to go underground and you'd be able to have all these really cool, sit with someone in the subway and you'd talk, and then you'd have all this stuff to write about. And it was like dry, like kind of dry. It's like, oh, somebody's over there talking on their phone and I hear part of their conversation, but there's no interaction, really. There's not much besides having to go through the masking we went through. So now it seems we can do, and literally do, screen off our actual world. I don't have a dog, but I see people walking their dogs, and this may be you, so sorry. And the dogs are like doing stuff, but somebody's on their phone, and these dogs are like asking for some attention, and they're winding around things, and their person starts walking, and the dog's like, ah! And then we didn't even know. Just not there. Non-introspective awareness. So it's hard enough to focus if we just look at one period of zazen. In a sense, that's a screen too. Can you imagine if like we had a screen, a projector, and like everything that we were, all of us were thinking in zazen was like up there? What a movie we would see. Be like, no. No way. Oh my God. Yeah, so how do we stop the leakage? Thani Saro, he's a Theravadan monk, and I love how he writes about practicing distraction. He says, as soon as you've noticed that you've slipped off your breath, if you're ardent, you'll come right back. If you're not ardent, you'll notice, but you'll just wander around looking at the flowers, looking at the butterflies, and after a while say, well, maybe I should go back to my breath. It's good that you get back, but the whole point is to get back more and more quickly, because it's in those gaps in your alertness that important things are going on in the mind. The mind does have a tendency to place a curtain over its workings, like the Wizard of Oz, the one who likes to hide behind the curtain as he manipulates his machinery. Once the curtain is stripped away, it destroys the illusion. Do we really want to stay in the illusion? Maybe. But unless the mind likes to engage in illusions, it builds thought worlds that don't seem totally real unless you can close off your awareness of how the thought world was built. It's in those gaps of alertness that the actual machinations of fabrication are going on. So those are precisely the things we want to see. As soon as we realize we've slipped off the breath, come right back. You learn several things. You learn how the mind slips off and what it's doing in the middle of the time when it's slipping off. You learn important lessons about the workings of the mind. I remember somebody gave me a gift to see a psychic astrologer. Two things in one. They had a body chart. And then when I met with them, they said, oh my God, they said, they weren't judging me, but I just have to say, this part of your chart, like across my head, was like the sirens of Ulysses. And I was like, say more. Sort of, kind of, don't. So you may know the story of the sirens of Ulysses. There are these strong beckoning sounds, and Ulysses, like singing, that was like drawling, and it would draw sailors in the ship too close to the rocks, and then the ship would be destroyed. So Ulysses wanted to hear the songs and said, tie me to the mast, and gave strict orders to the rest of everyone, cover your ears, cover your ears. And so, in a sense, mindfulness is that stake, that mast we're putting ourselves to, so that when we're pulled away, we're mindful, we're in the present, we're seeing. In another talk I read, distraction is also referred to as desultoriness, from the Latin root meaning skipping around. That really resonated. Scatterbrained, right? Mentally jumping. I used to say I was very, I felt very impetuous. Next, new, next. I was just boom, 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 boom. Restless. Sometimes it's called the monkey mind. You know that little monkey? Swings on a vine, grabs another one, swings, grabs another one, swings, swing, swing, swing. My teacher used to say, you might go from cradle to death swinging. So we have a chance to interrupt that. In the Chinese calligraphy, the word mindfulness is in two characters. And the top one represents a shelter, which represents the word now. And the bottom character is the heart. The heart. So means bringing the heart to the present. That's mindfulness. Remembering. Remembering what to do. So we're inundated with a constant flow of information. So we need to be very attentive. The monastics and teachers were talking about this. And I think our nervous system hasn't evolved enough to face this onslaught of global crisis, if I might call it that, I wrote. And that we're actually making, right? And a good part of that is definitely technology-based. I read in this Cognitive Science article, when you order a single cup of coffee these days, for example, organic decaf vanilla latte extra hot, you make more decisions than your grandparents made in a week. I thought that was, if that's true, I think that's astounding. So, wow. If that's true, like just ponder the levels of connections and that our brains now and hearts are trying to digest when we stay plugged in. It said also, in 1 month, many of us connect with more people online and in person than our grandparents did in their entire lives. I know somebody said, I have 596 friends on Facebook. It's like, okay. No wonder we feel overwhelmed. No wonder we retreat from the truth of what is happening to this beautiful home called Earth, into a cave of our own making. Thinking will be out. It's hard to face our discomfort and pain and aloneness. I think that increased with COVID, that feeling that we all have. We have some evolving to do before we can open up to what's happening, and we don't have a lot of time to do so. So things are transforming and evolving very quickly. In the meantime, it's a good practice to notice and to give space. Give ourselves space, because nobody around us will give us that. So if we can give it to ourselves, then we can also give space to people. Make space to feel and practice to understand that active quality of misknowing at the root of any emotional affliction. So in yesterday's retreat, we looked at a selected mental factors in the Abhidharma teachings, which Abhidharma is the Buddhist psychology. And distraction is classified along with others such as laziness, inattentiveness, which is one of the 21, bear, stay with me on these lists, one of the 21 destabilizing factors of the mind. So the Sanskrit name for this factor is called vikshepa. It arises when the natural flow of sense perceptions, the natural flow of how we perceive, of sense perceptions, is joined with and tainted by our emotions. So we're seeing, we're hearing, we're smelling, we're tasting, and then that gets tainted by our emotions. To say distraction is fueled by the usual suspects, rejecting, grasping, denying. So distraction is just not some mental jilt. It's highly emotional. That's important to know. Distraction is highly emotional. It said, vikshepa is often translated as distraction or mental wandering. It refers more specifically to the wandering mind being drawn to objects that cause it to lose its ability to remain one-pointedly focused on virtue, on what's helpful, on what's good. I was really struck by that. So it points to a very specific kind of distraction. Distraction from keeping our attention on what matters, what's genuine and virtuous. Astounding. And if, can you feel that? I know it when I do it. I know what's virtuous and what's genuine. And then I go. I go because I feel something that's uncomfortable. And now we can just keep going and going and going. And this is asking us to practice that, because we can really be moved by greater things in the world by staying distracted. And so we have all these things that are created in the world that keep us going, and we miss what's really important. So we got to stay awake. This is how it happens. So practicing and learning how to pull our mind back when it wanders is a reactive one. We are learning how to respond to distractions. And we get a little better at responding to external distractions. And then we could see even a greater field of internal distractions. I keep noticing, not just reacting to something outside, but also how I keep continually creating them inside. We find that we need distractions, so we continually cook them up, keep them going, like they're our pets or companions. Distractions are like our friends inside, because then we're not alone. We don't feel that, oh, that starkness. Trungpa Rinpoche used to called our continual inner distractedness subconscious gossip, a kind of ongoing drone of thought fragments and opinions. He also talked about what he called entertainment mind that needs to be fed constantly. If there are no immediate distractions, it will manufacture new distractions on the spot, engaged in a continuous distraction project, keeping the distraction and the entertainments flowing without interruption. Flowing without interruption. That's what we can do now. We can keep it flowing without interruption. How do we interrupt? Look at the sky. Look at the tree. Breathe. Go to the river. Breathe. Someone gave me a list, another list, which I'm not going to read them all, thank you, of questions concerning technology. And it was really helpful. I'd love to do them all with you, but I won't, because there's 41 of them. But I'll just pick a number. Okay. How will the use of this technology affect my experience of place, of time, of people, of other people? What will the use of this technology encourage me to ignore or notice? Does the use of technology bring me joy? Does it arouse anxiety? It could be all of this, right? It's not, it's just asking a question that we should ask if we want to. Does it empower me? At whose expense? Can I imagine living without it? Why or why not? Does this technology require me to think more or less? Does it encourage me to feel, to care? What does it generate? You get the drift? You can write me if you'd like a copy, or I can post it for you if you'd like to ask. So, staying with practice, if this is your first time, maybe you came with, like I and many do, with something very romantic, like, I'm meditating. It's going to be the hall of bliss. And I won't be touched. I'll just be in a bliss. And then we realize we're in the eye of a storm. And our mind is just, winds are circulating. And then eventually, if we stay with it, that starts wearing down. We get worn down, and we see, wow, we don't have a lot of wiggle room here, what we're seeing. Maybe a kind of shock at all that's going on. One teacher wrote, working with distraction, it's like a major liquidation sale. All our distractions and entertainments, everything's got to go. That's Zazen, a major liquidation sale. Distractedness begins to crumble. And there we start to meet our disappointment and our pain behind the veil. How wonderful. How wonderful. It gets genuine. We feel. It's our freedom right there. Dreams and illusions begin to evaporate. Everywhere we turn, we get thrown back on ourselves. Mirrors all over. We start to see all the mirrors reflecting our state, where we may have been able to fabricate scenarios, alternate scenarios, so we can never be pinned down. It's humbling and frustrating, but we don't have wiggle room. We try and make it again, but once you know, sorry. Once you know what the game is, it's hard to go back. It's hard to fool ourselves, but we will. But we can start relaxing with that some and see it for what it is. That's all. Not judging. It's the opening. It's really the opening. It's where practice begins. Pulling back the distractions which felt threatening, even terrifying. We begin to see we're in a clearinghouse sale. And we start to see in a new way. I had this piece about this artist I love, Giacometti, wherein his vision changed, not to derail us, but I thought it was interesting. I wanted to share it. So he went to the movies one night, and he was seated in the theater. And without forewarning, he experienced one of those miraculous instances of self-creation in which the present abolishes the past, even as the future abolishes the present. This is what the writer's saying. It caused a radical change in the artist's view of the world and his art. He saw this at once, and later he spoke of it. He says, "The true revelation," he said, "the real impetus that made me want to try to represent what I see came to me in a movie theater. I was watching a newsreel. Suddenly, I no longer knew just what it was what I saw on the screen. Instead of figures moving in three-dimensional space, I saw only black and white specks shifting on a flat surface. They had lost all meaning. I looked at the people beside me, and at once, by contrast, I saw a spectacle completely unknown. It was fantastic. The unknown was the reality all around me, and no longer what was happening on the screen. When I came out onto Boulevard Montparnasse, it was as if I'd never seen it before. A complete transformation of reality. Marvelous, totally strange, and the boulevard had the beauty of the Arabian Nights. Everything was different. Space and objects and colors and the silence, because the sense of space generates silence, bathes objects in silence. From that day onward, I realized that my vision of the world had been photographic, as it is for most everybody, and that a photograph or film cannot truly convey reality, and especially the third dimension, space. I will add the fourth dimension, and the fifth dimension, and the sixth dimension, and the seventh dimension, and the eighth, and all the way up. The very moment a distraction arises, there's also a chance to break through to what lies behind it. And what lies behind the endless distractions is the boundless space of the awakened mind. So not being distracted to open up that boundless space of the awakened mind is not only for yourself, but for this world, for others. So we have compassion for ourselves in this process. I'd like to end with a poem by, and a few words from Maya Angelou. This is by Miller Williams. It's called Compassion, short poem I found. Have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it. What seems conceit, bad manners, or cynicism is always a sign of things no ears have heard, no eyes have seen. You do not know what wars are going on down there where spirit meets the bone. And I'll leave you with Maya Angelou's words. Do the best you can until you know better, and then do better. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.